There's just so much more to hear.
Download our podcasts at DubaiEye1038.com.
Orange and Green is the sustainable food program initiated by Bord Beer, the Irish Food Board. The Orange and Green promise is an unprecedented one. It's the only sustainability program in the world that operates on a national scale, uniting government, the private sector and food producers. I'm at Lakeview Farm with Declan Fennell, sector manager for meat at Bord Beer, meeting with Jane Shackleton. It's a gloriously sunny day in County Cavan as we walk through the beautiful gardens at the back of the house, through hollyhocks and roses to the fields beyond.
Very beautiful.
Wow.
So this is a good example of very old-fashioned Irish yard. The whitewashed walls and everything.
It's lovely.
Wow.
That's our little Airbnb just there.
Little character.
Yeah, and we get a lot of people staying. They're interested in, more and more I see people staying because they're interested in where their food comes from, the organic kind of side of things, and I guess food provenance in general. And we're pretty much self-sufficient with regard to veg and beef and lamb. Dairy, no dairy yet.
And how long have you been organic farming with the beef?
Just over 25 years, yeah. Generally a 2-year conversion period, and we've been kind of 25 years converted.
So what were you doing before that?
Well, my mum converted the farm, and we were living just outside Dublin. But this farm has always been organic. I mean, yeah. the principles behind it.
Yeah, I guess that's right. It's interesting. You speak to a lot of people who will say, well, wasn't that what farming always was? It's just with urbanisation and processes and population growth that its farming practices have altered. Yeah. But getting back to the origins of good, healthy
practice. Obviously don't use any chemical fertilizers or pesticides or anything like that, so you just have to learn to embrace the weeds.
Well, it's a beautiful place already as we're walking up through the garden, past the house, now up to the fields. How would you describe this sort of landscape or terrain?
I suppose a thing that you'll notice around this part of Ireland is a lot of the kind of dry stone walls, which would have been built, I suppose, as boundaries, but also to clear the fields of the many, many stones and rocks.
How many cattle have you got?
So we have an Aberdeen Angus herd. We have 30 suckler cows, and then we will bring all their progeny on to finish. So I suppose they'll have 30 calves and 31-year-olds, 32-year-olds, and then, we'll bring it on. So they calve in the springtime. So you'll see here, we'll walk down.
It's beautiful. They're all sitting, lying down.
Yeah. No, they don't do much. It's unusually warm, I suppose. And we have this, you'll see this kind of rough area here. Well, in Cavan, we think these are lovely, nice fields here. But then this is actually an old deer park, the far rough ground. So you'll notice the really tall walls, which originally would have been kept a herd of deer in. So we actually are unusual. We outwinter the cows. So the cows never come inside. They calve outside. They just go under a bush and pop out their calve and it's easy. Yeah, we don't have any issue with disease or.
And I suppose what's lovely is that as you're calving them and, you know, bringing them on to the next stage generation, you've got over the last 25 years, you've followed a line.
Yeah, and we will be a closed herd. So as we've been slowly building up numbers, we breed all the daughters for replacements. So the only thing that we change would be the bull. So you'll see a very young bull in here. Actually, we've just switched him. So, that's the only kind of breed that we'd bring in. I brought in my three Belties this year.
What are they?
They're belted Galloway cattle. Our system would be pretty low input. So they're outside the whole time. We don't feed them any grain. It's all grass finished. You'll notice, well, the sheep have been in here, but a lot of clover and mixed grasses. And we've just sown some red clover for silage. So all the finished cattle will purely be finished off grass. So no concentrates.
For us coming and looking, our perception of Ireland is this green island with wonderful grass, and it's a feast for the eyes for the, you know, me visiting, especially from the Middle East. So what is in this grass? What makes this grass so special?
I suppose For us in organics, it's really important the mix of grasses. So there's no monoculture here. This is permanent pasture. It's been like this since time began, since this field were cleared. As I said, there's clover, there's vetch, there's lots of different types of grasses. They're different tapping roots, so they're bringing up all the nutrients in the ground. The only fertilizer that we will use to, because if you're taking off fields the whole time by the cattle grazing, so we'll spread manure, so straw-based manure, and that's the only kind of fertilization that it'll get. So you're trying to get that closed system and not bring in any imports, I guess, as such. Yeah, you'll see in organics, which is really important, these clovers, white clover and there's red clover. So that's where your farmers go on about nitrogen, and that's where your nitrogen is coming for the soil.
And then obviously you're getting that taste and flavour as the consumer when it reaches your plate, right, coming through the meat.
Yeah, with all the different types of grasses. And also, I suppose for us, biodiversity and the environment is very important, hence why we're organic. We don't like to see single fields just full of one type of grass. And I mean, you can, all these little flowering clovers and different kind of grasses are good for biodiversity and the hedgerows and everything like that. So that's quite important. And you'll see a lot of that in Ireland.
Do you do, in terms of the management of hedgerows, how do you manage them?
It's all labour intensive, so obviously we don't spray, or it's all just cutting back. A lot of our boundaries would be dry stone walls as well. So these are the girls here.
Beauty. So what age are they at now?
They're all a mix. We've actually put in a couple of heifers here, which we'll be calving next year for the first time. They're mainly all Angus, so Aberdeen Angus. Again, they suit the organic system. They're easy to finish. You don't have to be feeding them a lot of grain. And they're hardy. They calve themselves. I just go out in the morning and basically count the calves, and that's it. In Ireland, I guess it's from a food security point of view, you'll notice that all the cows and calves, every kind of bovine you have on the place has to be tagged. Same with the sheep. So the yellow tags will have information on it, like our herd details and then an individual number. So we tag our calves pretty much straight away because they're born outside. So mum and I tag them straight away. And also there'll be, there's a thing called BVD sampling. So we'll send off a little sample to the labs. I suppose that extra level of security and identification. And that is carried the whole way through then with that, say that calf there, when it's going for slaughter, all those details are traceable.
There's a lot more awareness when it comes to organic farmer or the small farmer when it comes to butchery. So nose to tail butchery, yeah. Almost back to the old practices,
yeah,
that I'm starting to become aware of more and more. And it was always the way, but we've kind of, again, you know, with mass production, moved away from that.
Yeah.
Are you seeing that here in Ireland as well?
Yeah, I suppose from an organic point of view, the demand is growing for our organic produce. Never mind, I suppose, beef and lamb. A huge growth in fruit and veg as well, in organics. So,
but yeah, using sort of the whole animal,
yeah,
or much more parts than,
yeah,
the obvious
it's a
ones.
Food trend at the moment, I guess it would be. Chefs are kind of thinking about doing different things, and yeah, using every single bit. I mean, the lamb that I sell direct, I sell boxed lamb. People might buy a whole lamb off me, and definitely they want everything. They want the kidneys, they want the liver, everything. So
traditionally in Ireland, what would have been a use of beef, a beef dish? Or
I suppose a roast beef would be very much a luxury. It would have been in the past. Yeah, and I guess it still is. Steaks and your kind of premium cuts would be a luxury, yeah. But
one very big and important trend is all about animal welfare,
yeah.
And we talk about the suckler beef production system here in Ireland. The most natural thing for a young calf to do when it's born is to suckle off its mother, and you can see the calf there now with the mother there. She's suckling away. Welfare, if an animal is happy, they're content, they're thriving, and I suppose everything is about the interest of the welfare of the animal.
Yeah.
How long will that animal suckle off its mother for?
We actually leave them on quite long, so probably until their November time, so October, yeah.
So she's getting all the goodness, and it's sort of, I suppose it's adding to her vigour and her strength, but it's the most natural form in terms of, I suppose, how animals should behave. And the other thing is, remember, is that Jane said that all our cattle here are outdoors. There's certain parts of Ireland where you have to bring the cattle indoors, and not from a welfare point of view, but from a land management point of view. If you leave animals out on land all year round, we get a lot of rain in Ireland. We don't apologise for that because it makes our grass grow and green. But if you leave an animal on the land at certain times of the year, in November, December, you'll poach it and you'll damage the soil structure. So we bring animals in really to sort of, it's a good land management practice. But as Jane said there, these animals are out all year round, and the most natural diet for a bovine or an animal, be it a sheep or for cows, is grass. And whether it's our beef or if it's our lamb or if it's the milk coming from the dairy cow to produce that great butter you had there yesterday or this morning, the combination is all down to that one ingredient, grass.
Yeah. And we hear more about the results of that beautiful grass when I come back. The high rainfall producing nutrient-dense grass is one of the things that sets Ireland apart when it comes to agriculture and meat and dairy production. Grass is the cheapest and best way to feed cows. Jane Shackleton is producing organic Aberdeen Angus out of Lakeview Farm, and in understanding where our food comes from, we have to appreciate the meat processing. And Jane explains the lifespan of the cows and when they go to slaughter.
So the Angus, generally they will go to about 2 years old, so about 24 months old. It depends... I suppose it depends on breeds as well, but for us about two, and then they'll go off for processing to be killed. So,
and that's all local.
Yeah. No, it would be. Yeah.
I mean, that's a good thing about Ireland. It's a small place, a country.
You're never going to have animals being transported huge distances. You'd be in America, I suppose. Yeah, no. There's just not that travel time, which is great. You don't have to. I mean, you do. You think about the animal welfare, and you wouldn't want to see bullocks or anything going on long distances, so that's good. In Ireland, it's not an issue. Yeah.
You're talking about a maximum, it's about an hour, it's kind of the maximum, an hour and a half, the maximum duration in terms of the movement of animals from farm to factory. I think what's critical, and again Jay mentioned about the ear tag, literally from the moment of birth the animal is tagged as a unique code and number, and assigned to that they have a passport. We have passports. In fact, there's more monitoring and traceability in these animals in terms of movements. So if these for animals, for whatever reason, were to go to another farm, that's recorded. We record a lot of things, and the importance is about have a system of a traceability. And that's run by our own Department of Agriculture, which is the ministry responsible in terms of movements of animals and recording systems. They're managing that big database, but when those animals will go to the factory, the first thing that's presented, even before that animal can come off a trailer, is they need a passport. And to validate passport, check with the ear tag, and then you say check. And then it's going into the abattoir. What's most important and critical is that you can reassure your consumer is and your customers that where the animals are coming from, and you have complete traceability. In terms of exporting product into the Middle East, they're going to plants which are halal approved, and they're approved by the relevant authorities both here in Ireland and also in UAE. What's critical is that the animal, number one, is regarded in terms of welfare, and obviously the halal ritual is respected. So there is somebody there from a point of view of I suppose the final process is halal slaughtered. Highly regulated and highly monitored, and that's an important thing in terms of the customer requirement for that, for those markets.
Jane has a real love and respect for the animals and takes pride in their welfare, and I ask her if she has a favourite.
So this will be my favourite cow here. This is Red, and she's the oldest cow in the herd, which is, I think she's nearly 15 this year, which is really old for a cow, but she had a great calf this year, so she'll keep going. Yeah.
And she's looking at you.
She's 15.
Yeah, she's looking at you like she knows you're talking about
her.
She's
in great condition, and she always does her calves really well, so calves easily, and she's got a really nice bull calf somewhere, so
they're so good. They're now just kind of moving in and surrounding us because they're so inquisitive.
Yeah, so you'll see there's two red cows. They would be from the old herd way back. That has kind of carried through. She'd have a bit of South Devon in her, but the rest would be Angus. Yeah.
So tell me a bit about the family and why passionate about the land and the production of beef.
Well, I suppose you kind of have to be, as a farmer, you have to have some kind of connection to the landscape and the farm, because it is tough work. You're here every day of the week and you can't just go away for the weekend. So these guys need to be looked after really well. So our family has been here for hundreds of years. So it's kind of nice to carry that on and keep interested in the farm. Yeah.
And the fact that you've talked about your mom and you as the daughter, but yeah. Well, where are the men? What are they doing?
The men aren't allowed to farm around here. No, obviously my dad helps out a lot with jobs that I hate, like fencing and stuff like that. So, but my mother would have, I suppose we're unusual that we're a mother-daughter kind of partnership farming. I guess I inherited that from her, yeah.
And any plans for the future? Anything on the horizon?
I suppose we just kind of keep on expanding and upping the numbers. And then we do a bit of tourism as well. So we'll look at kind of renovating a couple more cottages and things like that. That's been really busy. So people are kind of interested in the food side of it and staying on a farm. And somewhere different. So I think that's a big growth area, especially in Ireland when there's such a big agricultural kind of background to everything. So.
And you bring a strong heritage with your name, Shackleton, as well. So,
yeah. I suppose we'd be cousins of the Antarctic explorer, Ernest Shackleton. So my dad works in the Antarctic. He leads tours down there about 3 or 4 times a year. So I've been down there once, and it's like nowhere on Earth. So it's very different to County Cavan. But it's amazing. And becoming more accessible to people at the moment, yeah.
So any advice for people who maybe when they're going to the market, the supermarket or the butchers to choose their meat, what do you think they should be looking out for, or any tips or advice?
Well, I mean, it's very easy for me to say buy Irish, buy grass-fed, buy organic. But I think it's really important for people to have that knowledge and look at the labelling and look at the quality assurance marks and just take your time. If you're going to meat is an important kind of part of the diet, so you need to take your time and you're spending money on a premium product like a steak or something. You want to have the kind of best from a welfare point of view and the best system, and I think in Ireland that sets us apart, the grass-fed kind of side of things.
I've got a feeling there's someone behind me.
They're
coming in. No, I'm happy. I'd happily, I'm going to turn around and take some photographs. Thank you very much.
Yeah, you're
fabulous.
You're
beautiful
welcome.
Place that you live in. Absolutely wonderful. Hello, everyone. There they all are.
Isn't it amazing how relaxed they are? Just three strangers walk into a field and we can put our hand out and just touch them.
And that's that breed as well, the Angus breed.
The Origin Green Promise enables Ireland's farmers and producers to set and achieve measurable sustainability targets, reducing environmental impact. And Jane explains what other initiatives are available to them.
GLOS would be an environmental scheme in Ireland that farmers can opt in to. It's a 5-year scheme and it has lots of different, I suppose, items that farmers can do to improve biodiversity, environmental measures. Like here, we've put in a grove of native trees and more hedgerows and things like that, just to kind of benefit the environment more. It's a 5-year scheme, so there's lots of different things. There's traditional hay meadows, preserving the dry stone walls, things like that. So
I know there's the pollinator program.
Oh yeah, that's another one.
Yeah,
for bees.
I remember like years ago when the precursor of GLOS was a program called REPS, the Rural Environmental Protection Scheme. And at the time I remember I was teaching in an agriculture college and I had this module to give on farming the environment. And this is going back now about 20 years. And a lot of students will say, you know, what was the purpose and the end goal of this? But probably it was great foresight on behalf of the Department of Agriculture that they sort of said, hold on, we now start having a regard or better regard. And we always had that regard for the environment. But when I look at it and we've gone, our vocabulary has changed. It's no longer the environment, it's called sustainability. And sustainability is such a broad word and captures so many different things. So whether it's about soil management, land management, animal welfare, the hedgerows, the biodiversity, the water. We get a lot of rain in this country, but it's important that we use rain and water in a responsible way. So what the REP scheme did 20 years ago, or what GLOS is doing now, the biggest thing is creating awareness amongst farmers that we have a very natural resource And I suppose we have a responsibility of how we can sort of continue to safeguard it and how we continue sort of working with nature. At the end of the day, we still have to be commercially focused. But and I suppose the transformation of that is where Origin Green has brought it. And the success of Origin Green across the industry, I would put it down to, is where the awareness amongst farmers, the awareness amongst food producers, we're so much more mindful of it because we have a scarce resource and we have to use it in a responsible way. Plus, consumers are more aware of where the food is coming from and particularly how the food is produced.
More to come from Lakeview Farm in Ireland when I come back, when we move from the field of cows to the field of sheep. The UAE imported €58.4 million worth of Irish food and beverage in 2016, and it being a small island with little industry but lots of agriculture, rainfall and clean air, it's a perfect environment to produce food. Bord Beer, the Irish Food Board, has for the past 5 years been rolling out their Origin Green programme, connecting with farmers, producers, manufacturers and consumers to lead on sustainable food practices. I'm with Jane Shackleton at Lakeview Farm and Declan Fennell, Sector Manager for Meat at Bord Beer. And having viewed the Aberdeen Angus cows, we move to the next field to see the sheep, and Jane explains how sheep can add value to the organic farming system.
So I didn't know anything about sheep, still don't know a huge amount, but I brought in 50 ewes about 2 years ago and survived my second lambing this year. So they are really important in an organic system, just to have that mix. They'll clean off the ground and eat certain grasses that the cows won't, and improve the land. So,
so what kind of sheep are these?
So they're a mix, an absolute variety pack. I use a Charlie ram, but there's some Texels, some mules, some bit of everything. Yeah. So they don't get any concentrate or grain. All the lamb is grass finished.
The sheep are very, very efficient in terms of tidying up, and we often refer to them as like lawnmowers.
Oh, really?
Because some of the beef animals could be, let's say, selective, or they leave things behind. And grassland management, the most important thing with grassland management is you don't cut something back or they don't chew it back, it'll go stalky or stemmy. So what sheep do is they go in and are very good at tidying up. So you often find a lot of beef farmers, organic and conventional, will bring in sheep at certain times of the year to tidy up the land. If you go over the west coast of Ireland, where you're in a very hilly area, mountains region, beef animals or dairy animals won't climb up the side of a hill. They're too big. And where you look at sheep, they're a very, very efficient animal. They're very agile. They can climb and they can graze off and keep the landscape in check, you know.
They're really good at jumping over all our nice walls here as well.
Athletes. Yeah.
So is it the same at the lifespan?
I bought them in 2 years ago. I lamb towards the end of March, April. They lamb inside, but actually next year I'm going to lamb them outside. And a little bit later again, for just keep them healthy. And the lambs will go off towards the end of the summer. The summer ready fit, the early ones, which I will sell direct to customers. Box lamb.
Are they only eating grass, or are you feeding them?
No, the ewes pre-lambing will get an extra boost just organic concentrate, so just to give them a little bit of nutrition before lambing. But other than that, the lambs will get nothing. Yeah, so I mean, we're an extensive system, so they have a huge amount of grassland to kind of wander around. They're pretty free range, this crowd, and they've all been shorn as well.
So is there a sort of a regulation about how you define what a lamb is? Do you know what I mean? In the age?
Up to a year, isn't it? Yeah, and then they've become in and around.
Common practice is up to a year. So a lamb born in the month of March, April, May, during that period and onwards, is a lamb. Come the 1st of January, we typically refer to them as hoggets. But the true definition of when a lamb it becomes more mature is when the top two teeth drop down.
Yeah.
That's the but Mother Nature, not every lamb on the 1st of January would do that. So lamb, there's lamb, your yo, which is your female animal, is an older animal, and that's more of your mutton. But spring lamb, and I suppose maybe that's the one beauty of what lamb is evolving in taste always. So if you get a young milk-fed lamb, lovely milky flavour. You get lamb, which is spring lamb this time of the year. If you had a dish of spring lamb, beautiful flavour, you'd taste it. You get the flavour of the grasses. And then as that animal gets older and it's held on to longer, and it typically, if you look at a yo, that's a more of your muttony taste. Now, different consumers and the different profiles of consumers like different taste. There's certain markets that love that milky fed lamb on the continent. In Ireland, we love our spring lamb. That's really what our focus is and our choice is, and it's probably our biggest export, spring lamb. But there's certain markets in terms of the UK market where there's a very strong more in the ethnic population that they like the real muttony taste. So there's something for everybody, and that's the wonderful thing about lamb, is its taste profile is always changing. And they say the only thing you have to do is add mint.
Yeah, and also the fact that an animal that has had a stress-free life shows through its meat and what you get at the end as a consumer. The whole sort of process for these animals here in this landscape, but also how you manage them, is clearly making it a very stress-free kind of life as much as possible for them.
Yeah, I mean, you can see them there. They're just chilling out and hiding in the shade there on a sunny day, and they rarely come inside, same with the cattle. So yeah, they have a pretty relaxed life here.
It's like ourselves, it's diet and lifestyle, and the diet is the most natural product you can give them, which is grass. Yeah. Lifestyle, it's about being with the mother, it's about suckling from the mother, which is the most natural maternal thing any animal wants to do. And then the other thing is about being outdoors. And we talk about, in Ireland, we talk about a typical family farm system. We talk about it being extensive rather than intensive. And I suppose when you take all those ingredients, family farm, outdoor, the grass, they're all natural things. And when you produce something naturally, it's reflected in the product in terms of great taste.
Thanks to Jane and Declan there at Lakeview Farm. And we move now from meat to eggs. And I head to County Monaghan to meet Stuart Whitten of the Nest Box Egg Company, along with Seamus, who takes care of the 3,000 plus birds at Spinney's dedicated hen house, to see where Spinney's organic eggs come from.
And so this is the organic farm that's been set up for Spinney's organic eggs. Seamus here is going to give us a little bit of a tour around now in a second. It's a wonderful farm. I think there's 3,000 birds.
There's 6,000 birds in this house. It's 3,000 in another house. Oh, yeah. So they don't like to have more than 3,000 in one place, so they have 3,000 both sides.
One of the things about organic farming is that, you know, the maximum size of the house is can only be 3,000 birds. They have to have six meter squared per bird, which is the best out of all the different production systems. You can hear all the birds there now. Seamus has kept them in for us before to let them out in this sunshine, so we can hear them all giving out. So maybe it's a good idea to go in now and before we upset them too much.
Yeah.
The wonderful thing that we like about this farm is, you know, Seamus has the family here have done a lot of work and really taking things to the next level with organic farming. And one of the examples of this, and I'm going to get them to talk us through it, is they plant natural herbs in the grass around here. So there's the likes of, you know, chicory, rib grass. These type of herbs perform, you know, natural medicinal remedies or nutritional remedies for the hens, which really adds to the whole ethos of organic farming. It's something that they don't have to do, but it's something that they wanted to do, and we're delighted now to have them on board supplying for the Spinney's organic eggs.
So how long are they outside for?
They're generally out from daylight hours. Seamus held them back a little bit for us here today because probably wanted to see us have the dramatic effect of all these hens coming out. But, you know, daylight hours, they'd be left out. You know, hens are, you know, they like their routine. They like being out in the fresh air. They like pecking around. They're very curious animals. Here they come now.
You can hear them coming.
Yeah. And and then, you know, I suppose like us humans, after a hard day of running around the field and, you know, pecking around, they come back in later to feed and to lay their eggs.
Hello, ladies. I used to have hens when I lived in England.
Great.
And every hen was called Gertie.
Gertie.
It was always Gertie. Yeah. Bill the Bantam, Cockerel, and Gertie the hens, yeah.
Well, there's 3,000 hens here now, and Seamus has named every single one of them. with a very old Celtic Irish name that you can't pronounce. So you can see them now, that he's opening the doors and slats all the way down the sides of the hen house. It's a lovely modern facility here. It's relatively new, and you know, it's purpose built for organic farming. So these are exactly how the hens would be in their natural wildlife habitat. The nutting has been, you can see that their beaks haven't been trimmed. You know, I know it looks like a lot of hens here, but when you compare it to intensive hen farming, it's not a lot. They've got all this green field up here. They've also got all the green field out the other side as well, that they're going to be running around in soon. Okay, how do we open this gate here?
A very curious creature.
Yeah, just don't let them out. And I have Colette from Spinnies on to me going, what happened to our hens?
Brian, I gave you one job.
They are so happy.
I think if I just chill out, I'm going to probably come over.
So what you got there then, Seamus? Breed of hen, or are they, what are they?
Yeah, it's a red hen, Landrumster right name. So
she's beautiful.
Yeah,
so how old would she be?
They're about 53 weeks now. Yeah.
How do you know a healthy bird? I mean, she looks great.
Yeah, she looks good because, well, usually their feathers are nice. There's a shine of the feathers, and they've most of the feathers, but sometimes they lose their feathers and regain them. I suppose it's like a person losing their skin and regenerating it. But they're looking well, most of them now. You'll always get one that maybe isn't looking as well, but overall, the health is good, I think.
When you see their lovely bright eyes and the pink all around the beak, and I could sit and watch hens for hours. I find it really relaxing. What are they fed on then?
Yeah, well, they have their ration in there, the valerian ration. And then they're out here. They're out about 10 hours a day, so they can eat the grass, and there's bits of herbs and different things through the grass. So, yeah, so they're happy out.
More to come from the birds and talking eggs with Stuart and Seamus, and we learn about the herbs and grasses. I'm in County Monaghan with Stuart Whitten of the Nest Box Egg Company, who are members of the Origin Green Sustainability Programme, and I'm at the Spinnies Hen House in amongst the birds as they wander around and scratch about their green pastures. Check out the video and full story with photos on my special features page at dubaieye1038.com/Dubai Today and click on the special feature page there. Seamus is the person responsible for the upkeep of the hens and egg production, and I ask him about the egg laying process.
Hens are an animal of nature. You know, they walk on daylight, so they're not, if it's dark, they won't lay. So we have the lights up on about 14 hours a day, but during this time of the year, they're, you know, they have natural light anyhow. So, but they go into, they have a wee nest box set up, so they go in there and lay. There might be some lay on the floors, but 99% of them or more is laid in the nest box, sloped in, comes down the conveyor belt. Have to pack them down. So
okay, so you're not having to collect those by hand?
No, the machine's in there.
There's got to be a lot of labour there. If
3,000 there's a lot of. So we just have to. I have to put them in it can tray them and then put them in 6 trays, and then we have to put them on the pallet. So it's not too bad.
Fabulous, wonderful. Yeah. What a great place to work. I mean,
so it's flexible too. Like, you don't have to be here all the time, so you can nip in and out. Like.
So, Seamus, I've got to ask you, I'll ask you as well, but so when it comes to eggs, what's your favourite egg? How do you like to eat them, cook them? What do you like them with?
A boiled egg.
A boiled egg?
Yeah.
Soft in the middle, how runny, how do you have it?
I don't like it too runny.
A bit of salt on?
Well, salt's not good for you, so try to keep that out.
So you're harvesting 7 days a week?
That's it. Well, Mark, you see, can stand in too, so we kind of walk. We have a bit of a system walk, and I might be on a certain weekend, and then he's on weekend. But I'd be here the full 5 days, Monday to Friday.
Yeah.
It's flexible, like, you know, you're busy for a couple of hours, and then you come back, and then you walk. You kind of walk with the hen, you don't walk with the other, you know.
I love this facility.
Yeah.
I love taking people to this facility. It's beautiful.
And there's nice deer.
Very good.
Come on, you're okay.
You need to wave with the girls.
Gotcha.
There you go.
Mm-hmm.
It's okay.
Mm-hmm.
So typically a bird would lay, on average, is it one per day?
It's funny, when we come in at the start, we picked, I suppose, about 97%. Back down maybe 92.
It's okay.
We slip in. We got a good hit. I suppose hard to get up into.
So we've got chicory
here, and we have yarrow. This is ribgrass, and you wouldn't be in Ireland if you weren't in a field that didn't have clover. Okay, so this is a nice clover here, and I'm sure you know the story. I spent many a time when I was younger running around looking for a four-leaf clover. And
did you ever find one?
No, and I thought that was four there, but it's not. It's actually just two together.
Well, we think, the herbs is good for them, and we're hoping that the eggs better a stronger shell. You know, when you see the eggs, like most of them, 95% of them, is nice brown, tan colour. And then you'd find, even from the go out in grass, you know, they should be eating maybe, say, 140 grams.
Yeah.
And we would find they'd only eat 120 grams. It's not because they're going hungry, because production is staying up, but they're happy out here and they're getting a bit of feeding in the herbs, because they don't mind eating grass, but grass wouldn't be their most natural thing. Like, so they'd rather eat a bit of herb and all that, and then some of the longer grass, and then they can nest into it and that. But Mark tries to rotate it, so that's why they're going over this side and they're eating it. So if you go over there, you can see they'll eat all the chicory first, they'll eat all the herbs first.
Yeah. Basically, for their diets then, there's more protein in the herbs, they're medicinal purposes, some of them anti-inflammatories, natural wormers, so eating the herbs, the hens just know that this is the best thing for them. And because they're more nutritious and they're full of all these lovely qualities, that's probably the reason why they don't eat enough. So they have to eat a hell of a lot more grass to get the same nutritional benefits.
Fabulous. It's a beautiful place.
And this farm, it's really hats off to the guys that work here. You know, they put so much effort into, managing the different fields. They weren't required to put these herbs in this grass, as an example. The place looks fantastic. The hens, as I'm sure you've seen, look absolutely amazing.
Beautiful.
They all seem in great form as well,
fabulous.
It's really hats off. The Bord Bia scheme, the Origin Green scheme, this organic farm, all of those things come together. And then what a customer buys when they're in Spinneys and they're picking up organic pack, six pack of eggs, that's what they're buying. They're buying all of these schemes together. So an awful lot of work goes into that.
So every time I'm in Spinneys now and I look at those eggs, I'm going to be thinking of this farm all the way from Ireland. Beautiful green island. Thanks to Stuart and Seamus from the Nest Box Egg Company. And something to try over the weekend, how about Irish buttermilk pancakes? Take some nice Spinneys organic eggs, a cup of self-raising flour, a cup of buttermilk, a tablespoon of caster sugar, butter for frying, and there you go. Put it all together, and maybe when you finish your pancakes, sprinkle on top some blueberries or even a dollop of yogurt and maple syrup. So it's really easy. Take a mug or cup to measure ingredients. It doesn't matter what size, as long as you stick to the same cup for all your measuring. Put the flour and sugar into a large mixing bowl. Slowly add the buttermilk, whisking all the time. Crack your egg into the mix and whisk it up. And over a medium heat, melt some butter in a frying pan. Put 2 tablespoons of batter into the pan for each pancake. Cook the pancakes on one side until you see little bubbles appearing. This should take 2 to 3 minutes. Flip them over and cook for another 2 minutes. Keep going until all the batter is gone. That's it from me. Have yourselves a tasty weekend.
There's just so much more to hear.
Download our podcasts at DubaiEye1038.com.